From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the White House releases nationwide mandate rules, how states are responding to those rules, and how the issue of education turned the tide in the Virginia elections. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Thursday of this week, the White House released, through OSHA, their rules for a vaccine mandate for those who work in companies with 100 employees or more. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about the fallout of the mandate is Representative Mark Green of Tennessee.
Congressman, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, you've worn a number of hats that give you various perspectives to speak to this. As after your service in the Army, you founded an emergency department staffing company that provided staffing to 52 hospitals across 11 states. What will these new rules mean for small businesses and for healthcare facilities?
Well, they're going to be devastating because there is a percentage of our population that has chosen not to get the vaccine. They have that right, as far as I'm concerned. And so you take 10% of your workforce, let's say it's 10%, in many industries it is, some it's higher. You just can't take that business hit. So if you do the penalty, that's $14,000 per employee, and that's devastating to a business. So it's really a crazy idea. And you mentioned tens of millions. It's actually going to affect 104 million people in America.
Let's talk about those fines for just a moment, because in the previous reconciliation bill, there was a provision that increased OSHA's fines tenfold, which would bankrupt a company overnight. Is that
right
in this latest version of the reconciliation bill?
So the reconciliation bill, we don't have the latest text, and honestly, she's whipping on the floor right now. They added 7 votes this afternoon to try to get, to sway those last 6 or 8 so that she can then bring the big package together to the floor today. I don't know whether she's successful or not, but, I mean, that's what they're doing at this moment, and the new language is sort of still sequestered, if you will. My gut says it's still going to be in there.
I know you're standing in the House cloakroom right off the House floor, and you may have to go and vote. So if they call for the votes, just let me know, and we certainly understand that our listeners do as well. The likelihood is, as I was talking with Kevin Brady last night, we didn't have a final number on what this was going to cost. Is it very likely that they'll be voting on a bill before they've even had a chance to look at it?
Absolutely. They seem to like to do that and just surprise themselves. But the most recent version of the bill was scored by the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School of Business, and they said it's going to cost at least twice what the Democrats are saying it's going to cost.
Earlier today, the CDC director, Dr. Walensky, testified before the Senate Health Committee on Biden's, the administration's COVID-19 response. She was asked about the release of OSHA's workplace vaccination policy, and this is what she had to say.
We know the most disruptive thing in a workforce is to have a COVID outbreak and to have workers in that workforce come down with COVID infection, severe disease, and in some cases, death. Vaccination, as we have seen, decreases your risk of infection by 6-fold, decreases your risk of hospitalization and death by 10-fold, even during this Delta surge. So there is absolutely a public health priority to get people vaccinated and to continue the important prevention and mitigation strategies, including masking, to keep them safe.
So, Congressman Green, why are we not having a conversation of all the facts? Why are they not talking about natural immunity and factoring that into the discussion here?
Listen, the CDC has, failed America, to be completely honest with you. They are relying on observational studies that have no control group when it aligns with their, and a sample size of 60 or 70 when it aligns with their political view, and then they're disregarding randomized controlled trials, which are much better, much more scientific, with a sample size of over thousands. and they ignore those when it violates their narrative. One of the biggest problems with COVID is the loss of trust in America's scientific methods, and that is a tragedy. We've discovered what I call the authoritarian bias in medical research now. Those that want to enforce their authoritarianism on others, it biases studies. And of course, there's the anti-Trump bias. If Trump says it, then obviously they're going to find a study not to support it. So this new poison in our scientific systems has really hurt America.
Yeah, I actually wasn't going to go there, but as a doctor, I want to ask you that question. You being the doctor, me not. You being a doctor, are you concerned about the long-term implications of this distrust because we've politicized a health issue?
Sure. You take the mask decision by the Democrat Party here in the House. Honestly, it motivates people not to take the vaccine in this case, because people go, well, if I take the vaccine, I still have to wear a mask. And that's what they're communicating. And I think they're doing more harm that way than, us not wearing masks. And I'm a physician. I make decisions based on risk and benefits. And,
right.
I think that the long-term effects of that are profound.
Let's talk for just a moment about last week. We've seen now this vaccination has been approved for children. We fully anticipate that this is going to lead to mandates for children. Now, unlike other vaccines where we've had longitudinal studies where we've been able to see the implications, the impact, the effectiveness of these, we've not had this. Are you concerned about the mandates coming there?
You know, my frustration is it goes back to that how we make decisions as a doctor. You make decisions based on risk.
Right.
And benefit. And if you're, let's say you're 60 years old, I'm 57 on Monday, right? So I have a higher risk of COVID than I do the vaccine. So it's wise for me to take the vaccine. There aren't enough studies in children, I think, to show the risk-benefit ratio. And we know the mortality for children is almost zero. In fact, it, statistically is zero, just about if they have no comorbidity. So what we're doing is we're adding some risk where, the risk of COVID is just almost zero.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Joining me by phone off the House floor, Congressman Mark Green of Tennessee, ER doctor. So what is Congress's response? Look, I know the Republicans are in the minority, but will there be any effort to roll back this mandate?
So obviously we're going to push, we'll file bills, but it's very unlikely that the left is going to do anything. They can't learn from a trouncing that happened, and I know you're going to talk about this later in your show, but they just seem to double down on everything that caused them to lose all across this country on Tuesday. So I don't expect a change from them. We'll continue to fight it, but it's unlikely that as long as they're in control, anything's going to happen differently.
Well, Congressman, again, thank you for being generous with your time. I know you're on the right off the House floor. You've got a vote.
I'm on the clock. Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Take care, Tony. Thank you.
All right, Congressman Mark Green, great guy, Army veteran and doctor who understands these issues. And again, I agree with him on you look at the risk. If you're at risk, you're a high risk category. You look at the vaccine, yes, it's new, it's not completely tested. There are some complications with it. You need to look at that. You need to have a conversation with your health care provider, your doctor, and then you make that decision. Maybe you are not in a high-risk category. No underlying issues that would put you at risk. You know what? You probably don't want to do it, especially as you look at the younger people. Or you've had it and you've got natural immunity. Those are not the conversations that are taking place because the government has pushed forward this mandate. It was interesting that this deadline was moved to January the 4th. We talked about this, I think, last week on the program, where business interests were here lobbying the White House to push this beyond the holiday so it wouldn't disrupt holiday sales and the retail industry. Well, that's going to be great for them, but not so good for their employees. Because those employees come the first of the year, who have not surrendered, capitulated, and gotten this shot, whether they needed it or not, are going to be out of a job. Now, we're going to talk about this coming up next. We're going to be joined by Indiana Attorney General Rakita. We're going to talk about what the states are going to be doing, and they're already lining up. In fact, I fully expect to see lawsuits filed tomorrow. We're going to talk about that. Also, we're going to be joined a little bit later by the Attorney General of the state of Ohio, Dave Yost. Ohio is taking action as well. So this is far from done. Of course, it's being structured to make it difficult for the states to push back, but the states will push back. But again, in the end of the day, you need to make the decision that's in the best interest for yourself and for your family and your loved ones. Again, evaluate all the risk. If you need the shot, get the shot. If you don't, you make that decision. It's yours to make. And we need to keep it that way here in America. It's what makes America unique. Stick with us. We're coming back with more after this.
Have you ever tried to read the Bible daily but struggled to get in a groove? It can be hard, especially if you don't know where to start or how to understand and apply what you've read. Or maybe it's just that doing it alone has made it too easy to give up. Well, let me encourage you. You don't have to do this daily discipline alone. You can join Family Research Council's Stand on the Word 2-year Bible reading plan. Let's stay grounded in God's truth and grow closer to God together. Sign up today by visiting frc.org/Bible.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Again, to find out how you can be a part of our Pray Together for Life event on November the 28th in Jackson, Mississippi, the epicenter of the Dobbs case. That is the case that will go to the heart of Roe v. Wade. To find out how you can be a part of it, text the word TOGETHER to 67742. That's 67742. Pray Together for Life, November the 28th. You don't want to miss it. Earlier this morning, as we mentioned, the Biden administration published its new emergency temporary standard for companies with more than 100 employees. And the pushback was strong and fast. I said that there would be lawsuits tomorrow. Well, they were today. The attorney generals of Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee filed their lawsuits against the administration. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem announced via a Twitter video that her administration would join a lawsuit against the mandate. The Republican National Committee said it would sue the administration. And my next guest has announced 3 separate lawsuits. Joining me now is Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita. Todd, welcome back to the program.
Hey, great to be with you. I wish it was on some different subject.
Well, I mean, they're coming left and right from this administration. I should say left and left. Tell us about the 3 lawsuits that you will be filing.
Well, you know, this breaks down a couple different ways, 3 different ways, at least for us here in Indiana. First is the OSHA rule that you've described. We now have that rule. Remember, this was September 9th when President Biden said he threatened all of us and said it was coming. And for these 2 months, basically, he's been intimidating the American workforce, certainly us here in the Hoosier State, and perhaps even duped people into getting vaccines before the rule even came out. Oh, now we have it. So my brother and sister are attorneys general, the like-minded ones at least, are all in different ways filing lawsuits. And ours is going to be in the Seventh Circuit, which sits in Chicago, and the other attorneys general filing their own, as you've been reporting. Other states are joining together in groups. So that's the first one. We are going to fight back and ask not only the Seventh District, but ultimately probably the Supreme Court to stay this Biden OSHA rule, because this isn't a workplace issue. You know, we've had this virus around for years now, literally. It's so much more than the workplace, and it's decreasing all the time, by the way. But it's in our houses, our churches, it's in our schools. It's becoming, for better or worse, part of our lives. And to use the OSHA law to try to mandate this egregious and insidious requirement is just too much. A lot of it's been too much, but we think we have a great legal ground to stand on there with the first suit, for sure.
Well, let me ask you about that with the OSHA just the process by which it was adopted. They used the emergency temporary standard. And I think you could argue that at this point, we have neither an emergency nor is this temporary in terms of needing them to take this shortcut to put this rule in place.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, that's exactly right. It's still it's the same old game that they've been playing for at least 10 months now, but the left has been working decades on this, and that is, how much more can we chip away at your liberties and freedoms? You know, the lawmakers are the ones that are supposed to do the lawmaking, and only because we put them there. They're directly responsible and accountable to us, we the people. And these leftists continually try to flip that on its end. And, you know, that's what we fought a revolutionary war over. That's why we have these great timeless documents in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution to say to the world for the first time ever that the best ideas for self-governance are ones where the people are in charge and the government is subject to us, not, you know, right. Not that we're subjects of the king. And so this is just another and the latest example of them unwinding what really is American exceptionalism. So there's a lot of different fronts we fight on. And don't forget about the second and third suit that we have. Federal contractors under a different rule are going to be subject. They don't even have a choice like private employees, over 100 employees would, where it's a vaccine or a test. And by the way, think about the feasibility of a test. Are we even going to have enough testing kits to even cover the choice? But under the federal contractor suit, they don't have a choice. If you work for the federal government in some kind of contractual relationship, or your business does, you don't even get a test. You just have to be vaccinated as if you were, in fact, a federal employee. So we're going to be joining great friends in Louisiana and Mississippi to sue on that front. And that lawsuit, if not already filed, should be filed imminently.
General Rakita, let me ask you a couple questions. Going back to the first suit where you're filing in the 7th District and we have other states filing in different districts, is a part of the strategy to move this through different circuits so that we are putting pressure on the Supreme Court to take this case?
Well, you know, let me just say this, Tony. The attorneys general know how to use our phones. We know how to use our keyboards. We're coordinating for the best interests of our states, first and foremost. But the best resolution is the one you describe, where the Supreme Court weighs in on this way before January 4th,
right?
When this, again, this insidious and egregious rule would otherwise go into effect. So there is definitely a strategy to get this heard by the highest court as soon as practical.
Before we run out of time, General, give us the third lawsuit.
Right. So now we have the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and they want to require every healthcare worker who provides services that are covered by Medicare or Medicaid to be vaccinated as well. So you'll see, again, Indiana join with Louisiana, Mississippi, perhaps some other states to fight against that particular mandate as well. And again, that covers in itself millions of workers. We already have a healthcare shortage.
Right.
With millions of workers probably going to retire or not put up with this, you're going to have a real serious shortage in terms of delivery of services. And again, it's a good lawsuit in the sense that we fought this battle before in the Sebelius case with Obamacare. It's a direct attack on state sovereignty and ability to carry out its own policies.
Well, we'll be watching these very closely because a lot is at stake in the outcome of these suits and stopping this mandate. General, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Attorney General Rakita from Indiana, fighting a good fight. All right. Coming up, we're going to take another look at how and why education played such a key role in the Virginia governor's race. A little bit later, we'll be joined by the Attorney General of Ohio, Dave Yost. We'll continue our conversation on the mandate. But coming up next, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler of Missouri joins us. So don't go away. More to come.
Yeah.
More than ever before, Christians need to be grounded in the truth of God's Word and be prepared to articulate them in a winsome manner. That is why Family Research Council has launched the Center for Biblical Worldview. By applying the Bible and the historical teachings of the church to a wide range of relevant issues, including voting, religious liberty, abortion, marriage, and sexuality, the experts at the center have provided resources to help Christians live by a biblical worldview. To understand why Scripture must be authoritative and to equip believers to advance and defend the faith in the workplace, in schools, in their communities, and in the public square. Access free resources like the Biblical Worldview series at frc.org/worldview. To get highlights of the latest work of the Worldview Fellows, including their latest blogs, op-eds, interviews, and publications, sign up at frc.org/subscriptions.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. To be a part of our Pray Together for Life event, November the 28th, find out more, text the word TOGETHER to 67742. That's 67742, the word TOGETHER, and we'll get more information to you so you can be a part of that. All right, we talked about this yesterday, how education was at, well, actually, we've been talking about it for quite some time, about how education was really at the center of the gubernatorial election and really catapulted Glenn Youngkin to victory in the Virginia's governor's race. Now, the left is saying, oh, it's a big lie. This was all made up. It's not a real issue. But here, I want to commend the Republicans in Congress collectively. Of course, there's many individuals that do a great job, but collectively, I have to give it to them because they immediately made clear education is a real issue that matters. And yesterday, they held a press conference. Virginia Fox, Congresswoman from North Carolina, who is the ranking member on the Committee on Education and Labor, commented on the left's attempts to radicalize education. Play clip six.
This is our answer to the left's attempt to nationalize education. No. No to leftist indoctrination, no to critical race theory, and no to identity politics. Republicans believe that believe in policies that unite us, not divide us. We know that education is at its best when run locally and when parents have choice. That is what we are fighting for.
Again, that was Congresswoman Virginia Fox of North Carolina, the ranking member on the Committee on Education and Labor during the press conference yesterday. Well, joining me now to talk more about this, someone who knows a lot about education, but also about fighting the good fight, is Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, former public school teacher who now represents the 4th Congressional District of Missouri. Congresswoman, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Tony. It's great to be here.
And I know you are off the House floor waiting in the middle of vote, so if you have to go, our listeners completely understand it. We had Congressman Green on a little bit ago, so we know what you're up to. What should be the takeaways from Election Day with regard to the issue of education?
Well, parents deserve to be heard, and they are the best arbiter of their children's education. And I am so proud of the parents of Virginia who stepped up and said no to the critical race theory and no to identity politics, just like Virginia Fox said, and said yes to parental control over the education of their children. And the school boards serve the families of that community, and they should listen to them. And yet we had the Democratic candidate for governor who had the audacity to say that parents don't have any right to govern what is taught in the classroom. It's ludicrous. And I'm just glad that the parents of Virginia stepped up and said no. We deserve a governor who respects who we are, who understands that we should be teaching the ABCs and not the CRT. We need to be focusing on true academic achievement and not indoctrination in our schools.
Is this one of those situations of the left's overreach? I mean, they've been slapping down parents saying that CRT is not being taught in the schools. In fact, Terry McAuliffe made that claim when, in fact, the Virginia Education Department's own website shows how the teachings of critical race theory are being placed into Virginia schools. You've got the FBI, the DOJ, wanting to crack down on parents. Is this a case of that classic overreach?
Absolutely. I mean, the thought that the Biden administration and the Department of Justice wants to pull the full weight of the federal government against ordinary moms and dads who just want to have input into their child's education is frightening. And I think Americans recognize that, and that there's no place for the federal government to be coming in and doing that, and to portray them or to give acquiescence to what the National School Board Association was implying in their memo, that parents who simply give input in their school board meetings are domestic terrorists, and give credence to that by sending out a memo to all your local FBI offices saying that we need to, you know, set up a system to monitor and to take care of these problem parents is truly frightening. Education should be a local level. Parents should be listened to, and we need the federal government out of our schools.
You know, I don't know if you were, but I was certainly surprised and encouraged how quickly the Republican leadership stepped forward in Congress saying, hey, this is a priority issue. We're going to address it.
Oh, it has been, you know, near and dear to all of us Republicans' hearts, local control and parental rights and high-quality education. And it's been very concerning, and especially my background as a teacher and as a mother, to see the move of so many liberals in education, that they want the parents to stay out, to stay at home, not have any input. We are the experts. And we're going to indoctrinate your children. We're going to get away from teaching academics and start teaching this social, mental theories and things that fall in line with our woke mentality, and turn your children into little woke robots. And parents of this country know that that is wrong, and they're taking back control. So I'm proud of them.
And it's encouraging, and I think this is going to carry over into the next elections in 2022. So that's, to me, that's good news when we have citizens involved to the degree that we're seeing them right now. Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for stepping off the House floor to talk to us today.
I'm glad to do it. Take care.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.